This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Power Business. Top stories of the day.
It's 19 minutes past 7 on the Power Business Show. The next conversation around issues of climate finance. Now, we've heard that South Africa could possibly risk losing some climate finance pacts by delaying the closing of our coal-fired power plants there. And this was found by a panel that was appointed by our environmental minister there, Barbara Creasy. Of course, this is a very complex situation in South Africa. We have this terrible energy crisis, which was impeding on our ability to grow our economy, to even survive. While on the other hand, we need to be forward-looking. It is a double whammy. It is a complex situation. And of course, then are there these pledges that we've gone on to various COP meetings and made, and even money that has been pledged towards our efforts to become more green. And that, I think, is where we depart this evening. Joining us to really unpack this issue is Clyde Mallinson, who is an energy expert. Clyde, thank you so much for your time and good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much for chatting to us, Clyde. Clyde, just help us unpack again. What did we promise these more developed nations at? I think it was COP. It could have been COP 26. I think when we made those commitments, but we made big commitments and it came with big money. What did we promise?
Yeah, well, basically, as I understand it, is Eskom's coal fleet, many of the units in the coal fleet were due for retirement anyway. Nothing to do with climate change, just end of life, particularly the coal fleets that had reached 50, 60 years old. So there were a number of those that Eskom themselves were planning to decommission. And when it came to the climate finance, the deal that was struck was organized primarily by Eskom with those countries to begin with. And the deal was, listen, if you're going to be decommissioning these things anyway, then we're not really going to give you a whole lot of finance because they were planned to be decommissioned. But here's what we'll do. If you are able to decommission them on a slightly earlier track, in other words, if you can accelerate, if you like, the decommissioning of the coal fleet or these units that were due to be decommissioned, for everyone that you're able to do a little bit early, or if you commit to that, we will give you a whole lot of climate finance at incredibly good rates. And when I say incredibly good rates, I think it was close to $10 billion at something like 2 or 3% interest for 30 years, with 5 years where you only had to pay interest, not capital, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So it was like getting a bond on your home at 3% with a 30-year thing, and you only have to pay interest for the first 5 years. So it was what I like to call a carrot. It was saying, if you can do this, we'll help you in doing it, and the way we're going to help you is give you access to what's called concessional finance. But it was predicated on doing things a little bit faster than you were going to do anyway. Because if you were going to do them anyway, then that's great. We don't have to give you a carrot to do them. The carrot was to encourage them to do it a little bit more rapidly, but also then to provide finance to build stuff that would replace the electricity that would be lost when these things were decommissioned.
I do suspect here that the operative part here is the issue of pace. It's pace from the side of these financiers, but it's also the pace from South Africa here. What is realistic? For instance, if I think of the fact that we have to build 14,000 kilometers of transmission network to be able to put all the renewables online, that is a big project. It requires a financing. It requires us to really get a lot of moving parts going in at the same time, in the same direction. And of course, that's a delay. South Africa also just not great when it comes to execution of big projects, as we saw with Modupi and Kusile. But what it does tell us here is the fact that nobody's disagreeing on the direction. The real issue here is an issue of timing and pace.
Okay, well, I think the strengthening and the growth on the grid is, I don't want to call it a red herring, because clearly there's been insufficient investment in grid expansion. But the idea I've had for a long time, and the way I understood this climate concessional finance, or just transition concessional finance, is that most of that money would be spent in proximity to the existing coal plants that were closing. So there was absolutely no need to extend the grid at all, because you can imagine each coal plant has got a great big chunk of grid right next to the coal plant where it feeds in to deliver electricity to the country. So, and the idea also was that climate finance was only available for government to government. So I couldn't go along as a commercial operator and say, I would like to build a solar plant and a battery at a coal-fired power station. I want access to that cheap finance. The access was reserved for government to government. And of course, government to government, when it comes to electricity, Eskom is a state-owned entity. It's essentially government. So Eskom actually were the ones who were going to have access to that finance, and they were going to be able to build the renewables and the storage at the coal power plants, not only to mitigate climate change and reduce carbon emissions, but to transition the people who were due to be losing their jobs at those power stations and the ones who were mining coal. So it was a whole integrated program to basically provide a mechanism for moving people who were connected with coal mining and coal-fired power stations into renewable energies with super concessional finance. There were no real tricks or traps that I could see. The trick or trap was that we thought we could see tricks or traps, and we haven't acted rapidly enough on it, in my personal opinion, because you obviously can't close any existing power station until you've put something in its place that can generate what you're going to lose when you close it. So I often say, if you're a traveling salesman and you need your car, you need a new car, you can't sell your old car before you buy the new one, because then you can't be a traveling salesman anyway. So you kind of have to plan and say, well, I'm going to get the new one and get it ready, and then when it's up and running and I've learned to drive it properly, now I can sell the old car. You've got to do it in a planned fashion. And I think that the finance was to assist Eskom in particular, but I also suspect that other entities in government saw this concessional funding and said, geez, can't we use a bit of that for EVs? And can't we use a bit of that for green hydrogen? And everyone was suddenly wanting to get their hands on that concessional financing. And the original plan that it was there to assist Eskom in putting in new generation, which would allow them to marginally accelerate the shutting down of the old generation, kind of got lost in the wash, as it were.
Well, that said, then, Clyde, is it possible that we are lacking, is it the political will to move at this pace? Because it does really, for instance, if I think of us not having load shedding right now and all that it's already done for different spheres of the economy, many schools of thought can say that justifies our decision of keeping these coal-fired plants open. The fact that the economy can just function as it should, as a bare minimum. But of course, there is this, like I said, long-term issue of climate change that we're already, I think, living with the reality of today.
Well, you know, one of the realities is that we're using 1,500 megawatts less at the moment than we were last year, which is an indication of two things: a drop-off in our economy, in terms of particular platinum mines and others that are retrenching people, but also the household solar and the business solar that's been put up. So as a country, last year, when we had that dreadful load shedding, on average, we were short of about 1,800 megawatts, which, if you like, is 1.8 stages of load shedding, on average. This year, we're using 1,400 megawatts less electricity than last year. So we're almost there just from the reduction in demand. And then, of course, Kusile came back online last year in about, I think it was October or something, and that was 1.8 gigawatts. So I'm not surprised that we're actually not having load shedding at the moment. Combination of reduced load, increased rooftop solar, and putting Kusile back on. But what we should never forget is that a lot of these old plants spew out enormous amounts of sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide, never mind the CO2 that affects climate. And the health of people in the Mpumalanga coal fields is, it's just too sad to even begin to speak about. And so one of the reasons I've been an advocate for trying to accelerate the shutting down is to basically clean up the air in those areas and give the people who live there a chance of not spending their lives with asthma machines and on these respirators and the rest of it. It's a very serious situation. I don't know if you're aware that our minimum emission standards in South Africa are about one-tenth of what they are in China. So in other words, we're allowed to pollute 10 times as much as they are in China, and we don't adhere to them. We exceed them by, you know, 100, 200, 300%. So I just want to put a call out there that we owe those people in Mpumalanga an opportunity for access to clean air. Not even worrying about climate change at this stage. We're talking NOxes and SOxes and SO2. And I don't know if you know, one of the things that always brings me to tears, so I apologize on your show.
No worries.
People who grew up in Mpumalanga basically can't get jobs at Eskom or the coal mine. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they fail the medical examination.
Oh, wow.
If you grew up there, you can't pass a medical exam because your lungs are hammered. And I mean, if that's not the saddest thing you've ever heard. Oh. So most of the people who work there actually have come from elsewhere, mm-hmm. where they haven't been blighted by poor air quality. So that's the reality. And I think we should go beyond looking just at climate change and climate finance. We should look at the reality of the fact that there's approximately 2,000 premature deaths in South Africa due to coal mining and coal burning. And that's just a figure that I can't live with, knowingly.
Well, Clyde, thank you for this. I think it's certainly bringing us to an important consciousness that this whole transition has to be as just as possible to keeping people right at the center. I beg you from Radio Boat, we'll take your call in a bit. It is 19:31. Let's head over to Power News Headlines with Mayanda Zibondi.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
It's 19:34 here on Power Business, and of course we are reflecting on issues of a climate there. And of course, joining us on the line now is Beggy from Rodi Boot. Beggy, good evening. Thank you so much for your time.
Good evening, Noltando. You know, this is an interesting discussion, and politicians try to avoid it. I once asked Gwede Mantashe on another platform, how much did they receive from COP26? You know, because we made some serious agreements there with Germany, France, and some other West countries that we are going to transition and close as many coal stations, but we have only closed one, Komati. I don't remember us closing any other after COP26. So my question really is, and unfortunately we are not going to get an answer to this, how much did we get? You know, whether it's whether this information is classified or not. How much did we get? And if we don't transition at the pace on which we made commitments, how much do we then owe back at these Western countries? You know, very interesting discussion. But it's unlikely that we'll get answers from the politicians and all the time.
Absolutely, but yeah, I don't know if we'll get answers too. Clyde, do you know?
So, look, as far as I'm aware, very little money has flowed at this stage. So the funding that was promised, some of it was under the auspices of grant funding, which would mean they would give some funding that there was no obligation to pay it back. Now, the grant funding made up a relatively small proportion of the total amount. The bulk of the money was meant to be concessional funding, actual finance. And the idea was that if you spent it, let's say building wind and solar and storage, you would earn returns from that wind and solar and storage that would allow you to repay the loan, just like if you borrow money from a bank and you start a business, you repay the money. So I think we did receive, we received a small amount of grant funding. And one of the things that was happening is that some of the people wanted a bigger percentage of grant funding, but the grant funding was not the real essence of the thing. The essence was highly concessional funding to allow you, or to allow Eskom, to upgrade its grid, to allow for more connectivity, and for itself, for Eskom to actually own the wind and the solar and the storage that was put in with that funding. So at the moment, as far as I am aware, we haven't received much, so we don't owe anyone any money back. The idea is that we will get tranches of those loans when we bring projects that show that they are going to meet the requirements of those loans. So you'd have to come and say, right, we're gonna shut down Grootvlei over the next 3 years. But in order to do so, we're going to have to start building wind and solar and storage around Grootvlei, and we're going to create jobs, and we're going to do this and this and this. And then we can get it properly audited and show that we have now reduced the output from Grootvlei perhaps 6 months earlier than we should have normally under normal decommissioning. And therefore, we've saved 6 months of carbon. And for that 6 months of carbon saved, we could maybe get 10% of that money, as an example. So it's not as if we've got large amounts of that funding yet. We may have received some relatively small amounts in the form of grant funding. And the grant funding, the idea was to undertake feasibility studies of looking how best to deploy those funds in order to make the best use of them. So a bit like planning. It was planning money, if you like.
Only make sure that we get a hold of government, and we'll try to do that, Clyde, to try to really understand where we are in terms of that, specifically now that we have the lower demand that you've made mention of in terms of coal, and also just trying to track this transition story. There's lots of drips and drabs of information that is often released at different times. It can all get muddled up and confusing.
Yeah, look, But one of the suggestions I made that I still like is I would like the new fleet, because South Africa will have a new fleet circa 2040, if you like. So in 15 years' time, we'll have a whole new fleet. Whether we want to shut the coal down early or late, most of it's going to be shut down in 15 years' time. And I would like the people of South Africa to have an opportunity, the households to have an opportunity to actually own a percentage of that new fleet. And I would like the climate finance to stand as collateral for 10 million poor households who live in energy poverty. So it could stand as collateral, and those households could get loans to own a chunk of the wind, solar and storage that we're going to build over the next 15 years. And they would receive dividends from that. And the dividends would be greater than what they would have to pay back on the loans they had got, because their loans would have been concessional. And that way, 10 million households would have a chance of building up something of a pension. And that's what I would call a just transition. It's got nothing to do with just making sure the guys working on the coal plants get new jobs. It's basically transforming our whole socio-economic economy in the country.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening, Clyde, and also really just engaging us and our callers this evening.
Sure.
Wonderful. Go Power. That is energy expert Clyde Mallison.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.